Welcome to the 29th Annual Executive War College brought to you by The Dark Report. This year's conference was in beautiful New Orleans, April 30th through May 1st. The title of this presentation is Collaborating with Pharma Companies from Research to the Clinic: Strategies to Create New Business Opportunities for Your Lab. The presenters are Jennifer Quigley, Senior Director Global Precision Diagnostics, Novartis, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and Julie Ramage, Principal, Harbor Precision Genomics Consulting, Gig Harbor, Washington.
So without any further ado, let me introduce them.
So I'm Julie Ramage. I'm the principal of Harbor Precision Genomics Consulting.
I'm Jennifer Quigley. I'm with Novartis. I'm senior director of Global Precision Medicine.
And we were hoping to get together here. I actually came from pharma as well as diagnostics, working in laboratories for 23 years and then going to Pfizer and AZ for 11 years. Before coming out on my own, and Jen also was from the laboratory for
23
years, and now into the pharma space right now. So we wanted to make sure that we spoke to everybody about some of the strategies and applications that you could be utilizing for your business, and this is from everything from the smallest regional lab, health system, hospital, and vendors too can be very helpful to bring people together because there's a great need for people to be able to communicate. And what we also wanted to do is, I doubt we'll be looking at the app, I'll just be straight up honest, because we're just going to ask you to please speak out. The only thing is, because they're recording the session, when we ask a question, we have to either repeat it or we'll have you say it into the microphone, because we'd really like to have a lot more dialogue to hear from people rather than us just speaking to slides. So if that hopefully resonates with all of you too. So we'll start off, one of the things that we wanted to talk to you about here, again, was about finding a way for us to look at the different modalities. Most people, when they think of pharma, think of clinical trials, think of assay, think of biopharma, those types of things. But we're going to also share with you a lot of different areas that you may not have thought about before and that you're sitting on right now in your own laboratory that you could be utilizing and would be of value to somebody. We'd also like you to take a look at, instead of thinking as a specimen as being the one place that you get paid for, we heard Robert yesterday at the end of the day basically tell us it's going to be fire and brimstone, right? If we can find other avenues where that specimen just becomes a vehicle for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 other ways that you could find to monetize, you don't need to rely on the payment for that specimen. You could be relying on these other things instead. And that's what we want to show you right now, because this is how we're also going to develop and move together for the future when it's collaborating with pharma. So with that, I'm going to pass it over to Jen.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Julie. And I'd also say, just related to what Robert talked about yesterday, is thinking about how can you start now to really think about how you're going to create that grouping of collaborative organizations for value-based models? And pharmaceutical companies are important to that, because if you think about a pharmaceutical company, their primary business is to sell the therapy, right? Their primary business is to develop and sell therapies. So how does what you do fit into that model, and how can you work together with them to create these value-based models, and really it becomes more of a collaborative partnership approach, as Robert discussed yesterday. So this is I'll explain this slide very briefly. This is really just to give everyone, kind of getting you thinking about where you fit, where what you're doing kind of fits into that therapeutic model and the pharma model. And I have to say, this kind of concept came after being at LabCorp. And my responsibility at LabCorp was to develop their new product commercialization program in the oncology field. So starting to connect the dots between the Covance LabCorp drug development into diagnostics. And I realized there that there was not a great understanding necessarily of like how we could connect the dots and how the big picture looks. And we're not saying that, you know, every laboratory will have something to offer within this value creation. But if you can start to think about it, get in your mind of where there is opportunity and how things feed into one another. So if you think about pharma, the pharma company's role is really, again, biomarker discovery. They need biomarker discovery for drug development and also creating new biomarker assays. That actually feeds back into our clinical lab. So when you have relationships early on, you think about those novel biomarker assays, and those are coming back into the clinical lab to be offered to patients real time. That intentionally actually drives, number one, a hugely valuable patient identification. So patient identification, whether it's diagnosis or identifying a rare mutation or even a common mutation, for potential treatment opportunities, but it's also driving then that data going back into the system that again feed back into the innovation on the pharma side. So it really does create a value loop between between organizations.
So when we think about one of the benefits for laboratories, obviously, is we're looking at additional revenue streams. Remember, specimens going to lead to these other avenues to get some additional revenue. We also get access to new technologies. Right now, people are looking at spatial biology. They're going to single cell. It's all these things that are so far away from being in the clinic right now. But we've also seen the advancement of those technologies, where NGS now is available to the regional laboratory down the street, right? So things are speeding up in those areas. And that's what pharma is really interested in as well, as people who have access to those types of equipment and expertise. And then, of course, expanding your testing capabilities, the, you know, providing an avenue maybe as these new markers come out, that it's something that you could easily provide. I look at there's a number of PCR tests out there. Every lab has PCR thanks to COVID, right? So you could be utilizing those PCR instruments for other kinds of discovery that pharma is very interested in, or testing that they want. Because when we say the word precision medicine, we basically mean test to treat, right? We got to identify a patient so we know what treatment we're going to give them.
And I think I spoke a little bit about this in the value loop, but again, real-world data is critically important. Real-world data, not only for discovery, but also just, again, patient identification. It really gets back to patient identification. Patient recruitment, so again, playing back on patient identification, recruitment for clinical trials as well as for approved therapies. And then and experimental therapies. So this is a way for pharma to also install even platforms into laboratories. And Julie kind of touched on that with new assays, but I'll just give a really quick example. Prior to my role at Novartis at LabCorp, working with a small biotech company, which had a need for to find patients with a particular mutation, we needed a digital PCR test. It wasn't something that we had validated in the commercial lab. We worked with that pharma company to actually place the instrument. They paid for the instrument. We then ran the R&D on it, got it validated as an LDT, and were then able to use it with the pharma program, but then also use it for our own commercial use. So you have to think about, you know, those as also opportunities depending on where you sit.
I was thinking about the patient recruitment. So right now it used to be that before, I think that laboratories didn't really ever know the patient. It was a medical record number. You didn't really know them. But now, because we're giving reports directly to patients, we have more interaction with them, this is an opportunity for you to be able to start in a patient engagement dialogue. So if you don't already have a patient engagement portal, there's lots of options that are out there. They're not really that expensive. You could have different ways that you can continually engage with that patient, which would mean that as you maybe getting a test done for them today, they may not have something that is needed for pharma today, but then you go back and you find that that patient is someone that they're interested to speak to, and keeping that pool of patients. And it's so important in the community, because I don't know if you guys know this, but clinical trial enrollment is in the single digits. There's a lot of growth opportunity out there, right? And who are we looking for? We're looking for patients that are in these rural areas. We're looking for facts that we can be able to reach into larger communities that we normally couldn't get to before. And part of that is that you would sometimes it would be on the physician would say, I don't think Mrs. Jones is going to want to go to Dana-Farber. She's 75, comorbidity. She's not leaving Lubbock, Texas. So I'll just give her standard. No, that's not the case anymore now, right? So now we have a lot more of these kind of virtual, or where the PI person doesn't have to be right there, and we can have these kind of larger trials, and that's what we're trying to do is find these patients. So just think, you know, if you can reach out to that patient, have a patient engagement, that's where you're going to start your clinical trial enrollment. It starts there. So we were looking at the types of partnerships here. And we wanted to spend a little bit of time talking here a little bit, and we wanted to get some more engagement from all of you. I mean, we just talked about clinical trials. A lot of people think, well, don't you have to have a lot of things going on in clinical trials? And there's a lot of quality, very tight controls. But you could be offering your services to various contract research, clinical trial organizations. I mean, you just hit the Google button, and you're going to be able to find who's in your local area and offer your services. And we think about companion diagnostics, right? Companion diagnostic development, oh, that's only going to be the Myriads of the world or the Foundation Medicine. It doesn't have to be. There can be kitted solutions. There can be other things that you could be doing and offering a companion diagnostic in your area or helping them develop those. And then the big one is diagnostic commercialization. Again, they got to find more patients. So we now need to make sure that, hey, if there's something that's out there and we have an opportunity to develop that test and identify those patients, not only then could you possibly go to pharma and say, we'd be willing to bring it in here, how could you support us? So one of the big things in commercialization is not just asking pharma, like, give me money. That's what everybody thinks, give me money. We think about a strategy, right? So we talk to them about, hey, I see you're launching drug XYZ. We actually perform the testing that you're very interested in. I'd love to work with you and your field team to be able to commercialize it in my area, hospital, local lab, whatever it might be. Do you have a field team that I could engage with that could provide education to my physicians? And I'll provide the diagnostic expertise. And then the two of you go run out there and provide that information. They're ecstatic to have you working with them and helping them go to the places they need to go. Maybe they need to talk to your pathologist. Your pathologist is all grumpy, doesn't want to talk to them. Maybe as a laboratorian, you can invite them in and say, come to my lab. Let's engage and let me talk to you. Because one of the things, and Jen and I were talking about this at breakfast earlier, is about finding the right person, okay? And that is really important about how you find the right person. And just don't assume because their badge says AZ that that's the right person. And you need to be querying and asking them about meeting with the right people. And so there's a lot of people get stuck in a loop where they're demoing people, they're talking to people, they're very excited. We have a very big call with Novartis today, Jen. We're going to do a demo. It's going to be so amazing. And then you find out it's like, you know, not the right people, and then you're just demoing over and over, showing them whatever. So it's about finding the right people and asking those questions. I'm going to hand it to Jen to go a little bit more into that, if you don't mind.
We were talking about this. So one moment, I do want to step back really quickly on clinical trials, too, and then I'll come back to the commercialization, because I think, you know, as Julie highlighted, it's what, about 5% of, I think, oncology patients even go into clinical trial, which is not good at all.
Forget rare disease.
Yeah, and then it's even more difficult in rare disease. And I think, you know, I just want to acknowledge one elephant in the room, which is that getting the patient then to the investigator site can be very challenging. And there's challenges on the pharma. So it is a clunky, long process. And I've been involved not at Novartis, but in my prior life with this. So just be aware that for clinical trials and patient identification to move into clinical trials, it's not perfect yet. There are people trying things like just-in-time trials and things like that. So just setting expectations that if you do get involved there, there are challenges. If you are within a closed system in which you have investigator sites within your system of clients that you work with, that might be a different story. Getting back to commercialization, yes, I think, you know, one of the big things, and I'll, again, kind of speak from my lab experience, part of what I had done when I was at LabCorp was to build that linkage, as I said, with new product commercialization. And one of the things, you know, LabCorp, like many labs, only has limited resources, might be a big laboratory, but limited resources. And sending the LabCorp salespeople out to talk about a test that is maybe actually a low volume test, incredibly important to the pharma company because it's finding patients, but it's maybe not high on the radar or priority list for the salespeople. So very often I would have that discussion with our pharmaceutical clients and say, you know, we have these capabilities. We need your help in actually promoting the adoption of this type of testing. And that's a welcome thing. So it's just, again, a matter of having having that discussion. And when you think about how you can potentially help to drive up uptake of testing or adoption of testing, the first thing really is to think about how, before even like who do I talk to, what is it, who would potentially be interested in what I have? So what do I have? Like what is my client base? What is my, you know, diagnostic mix? What kind of capabilities do I have, both in expertise and in test menu? And what potential pharmaceutical or biotech companies or even CROs might be interested in what I have? And then really having that dialogue before actually building everything, but having in your mind what that plan kind of needs to look like. Again, as going back to even this commercialization, one aspect is, hey, we need you guys to help us out with driving adoption of testing and help with that conversation. Let me see. I think we talked about, so lab developed tests. Again, just mentioned. Yes. Here, just to highlight with the new final rule, one of the things that could be very, very helpful is, so I sit in our precision medicine team internally. Our team is very often, we struggle at times to be able to have the conversation internally to educate our own internal stakeholders that make decisions about what is happening and don't, they need to understand, right, what's happening in diagnostics. We struggle to always have that conversation and have to carry that ball along with others. So having partners like yourselves to be able to teach, you know, people in the pharmaceutical industry what you know is incredibly valuable. We, you know, before I went there, I just assumed everyone knew, oh, LDTs, IVDs, well, you can use all of these tests, CLAP, CLIA, New York State, they don't. So just even advising on what you know, and now with everything that's happening with this final rule, would be incredibly powerful way to get the conversation started. I think biospecimen repositories kind of speaks for itself. Think about that along with the matched data is important. And then data partnerships, you know, again, it kind of goes back to this biospecimen repositories and data partnerships. They really kind of go hand in hand. You can have one and not the other, of course. Biospecimen repositories can be really just tissue, you know, utilizing tissue, especially even like if you're looking at like rare tissue. A good example would be the NTRK. Those companies were looking for the NTRK mutation. They were looking for blocks just to do the studies on. And so that's actually very transactional opportunity. And there's certainly others. And then data partnership. If you have that match data, you have as a laboratory, you may or may not have outcomes data, but you certainly have quite a bit of demographics data. You probably are even getting some clinical data that's coming in with even esoteric testing. And then I think wanted to ask the question.
Well,
right?
I want to actually go a little bit more on the data, because I think when we say the word data, it just kind of sounds like soda. I don't know if it's Coke, Diet Coke, you know, Shasta, grape, I don't know. So we got to get a little bit more in the weeds on the data side. The things that you actually have even in your record that are interesting to people is about gaps in care. So a lot of times what pharma is trying to do is solve for gaps in care. So we realize like you start off a pool of patients and then they have to get tested, but then the specimen was compromised or whatever happened along the way and that patient fell out. So a lot of pharma companies, and John's here from Novartis, like he spends a lot of his time, you know, helping people find the gaps within their institution, right? So here's the lab. I'm sitting on the turnaround time data. I can tell you exactly when the specimen was taken, and then it took how long to get to me, and then I resulted it, and then you can then marry that to the PharmX data, the RX data, to find out when the drug was given. Just that turnaround time data is something they are interested in. And that's something you could be strategic in saying, hey, I work in this health system where we have this many sites that we're working on. Would you be interested looking at quality improvement projects where I can help you find the data that you're looking for to solve for? Time is always number one. Took too long, because if it takes too long to get the result, guess what? They're getting a different drug. That's a problem, right? So we want to think about timing. We want to think about Q&S. Hey, by the way, every time a surgery is done on Friday afternoon, that specimen is not fit for purpose on Monday. And here's all the data that shows it. Let's not do surgeries on Fridays or hire me someone to work in the histology lab over the weekend, right? These are the types of things that's very simple. That's just turnaround time. Think about what you could do. Like, if it sounds too big to say clinical trial enrollment, that's too much. Think about Q&S rates. Think about if you could capture like stage in a cancer patient. Very interesting to a lot of people now because there's a lot of earlier stage things. Just capturing little bits of information would be interesting to them. And to be honest, it doesn't have to look too fancy. When you give it to them, it could be in a CVS file. I mean, it really is, doesn't have to be super glossy or anything else. But I think one of the things that we wanted to talk about is asking you guys to, right now, who right now engages with pharma in one way or another? All right, somebody does. Okay, would you mind kind of telling us a little bit about how you do engage with them? We'll bring it over to you.
Who would like to go first? Love to hear.
Oh, sure.
So, hi, my name is Kunal. I run a CRO in LA. So we work with lots of pharma and diagnostic companies and actually help both physicians and labs get into research. So one of the things that we've found is all of these things are great and great things to start. But for us, it's much easier when we have a specific request because the scientists or even the clinical affairs folks, the devil's always in the details, right? And so you could say, hey, I have 3 million samples. But if they want a specific media with specific storage temperature,
sure,
right, with specific data, right, let's say gestational age, you may not, if you don't capture that, that sample all of a sudden isn't worth anything to them. And so all your work, right, it could be demotivating for the lab or for the doctor who's like, oh, I've done all this work. So what I was going to ask you guys is, what is the best way to get on the radar for, let's say, the pharma scientists and the pharma clinical affairs folks so you can get those requests and so that the lab can say, hey, I may not do that now, but if you give me a week, I can move this instrument and I can validate that assay and I can do that for you. Because I think that's where a lot of the friction is in getting stuff done and where we go into a lab or a doctor and say, hey, I know they want this and it's not really part of your standard of care, but if you do this, it'll work. And that's when the puzzle pieces fit.
Okay, and I'm actually glad you brought this up because we were talking about this. So pharma's this big, messy matrix organization, and people don't understand how to navigate it, right? So like what you're talking to is people in translational medicine or research, right? And you typically probably go to a meeting like AACR and chase these people down. And you're asking them, hey, do you have any projects? You know, I saw your pipeline has blah, blah. Anybody can go on any pharma and find the pipeline, and it'll tell you what they're looking for and what types of tests they're interested in. Be proactive and go and do that. So that's the first thing is you're looking for.
We are in a position where it's the reverse because we're a qualified vendor, and they know us, right? And so they send requests and say, can you do this? But I'm saying for someone, you know, like, someone who just starting from scratch, they don't get any of that visibility, so they don't even know where to crack in.
Well, that's what we're talking about too. And there's many different areas because we're looking at whether you're global or U.S., whether you're research, translational is before we get to phase 0, 1, 2, 3, phase 4, where drug is in the clinic, right? And then we need all of the longitudinal data after it's in the clinic. Now we're also then patient enrollment, and we're looking at prevalence studies and things like that. There's a whole, they're all different people, and they all sit siloed.
Yeah. And I think, Kunal, you bring up a good point, to just to add on to what Julie said. So if I'm a CRO or I'm a laboratory where I'm interested in that, the first thing is to get qualified. And I will say this is where, again, I'll be very straight and honest. You work with big pharma like Novartis or others. The qualification process is not easy. So you have to make sure that that's something you really want to get into. Smaller biotech might be different. Another option is to work with the CRO, so potentially with your CRO or another CRO that's a larger CRO where you become a subcontractor. And then that's an opportunity where you don't have to go through that whole qualification. So that's the first thing, is to become qualified both as a CRO within their lab quality system and also within procurement. Within the procurement system. So two important two important things. Some of the big companies also use something called scientists.com. If you're not there, you should get on that, because that's a way for scientists who have, if you have something unique or unique expertise, capabilities, platforms, whatever that might be, then they can actually leverage you in a, without going through all those systems for smaller deals, and that all the companies will work. So it's one place to go, scientists.com. There's another one. I'll look it up and we can send it out. Then once you actually do get to that point, I think you pointed out a really important thing when you do have a study is to, and it sounds like those details weren't really discussed up front. And we had this also happen when I was back and we were building the program at Maraca. Is right up front. Make sure that you have the right people, to Julie's point, at the table, and you are really thinking about all those little nitty gritty details, which might not matter when you're in the commercial diagnostic space, but is going to matter on the other space.
They probably didn't tell you because they themselves didn't know until it was oopsie
they
time.
They didn't know. Right. They are. So it is this constant, and I always say, like, you should definitely have regular touch points. Like, even if they say, oh, no, we only need to talk to you, like, once a month. No, that's for the first few weeks, or you probably can, 3 months even, every week we just need to have a touch point with you. So the scientists also are learning as well.
And these are the questions, again, I think it's, if you have a lab, and you're the lab manager or what have you, you might have commercial people calling on your pathologist. I would invite those people to come in and say, I'm looking for this. Who would be the right person? So typically you have, if you're a large institution, you have what's called a key account manager. And the key account manager is in charge of that ecosystem, and they have medical people, and they have sales people, and they have diagnostic liaisons, and they're all on this team. And they're all coming to you. I'm from blah, blah company. I'm from blah, blah company. And you got to get them together and say, hey, we're really interested to talk to you about data sharing. Who would be your data people to talk to? Very specific. Hey, we're very interested to do some clinical trial enrollment. Who would be the right people for this? If you're waiting for them to come to you because they really are coming to you to try to educate you, just so you know, and what you need to do is, in reciprocation, educate them about what you have, but it's more about getting to the right people and asking for those people, and just know it's going to be a lot of different people. And it might be hard for that field person who's engaging with you to find them, but if you keep just really plugging away your specific asks, you'll get the right people. And when they tell you, we're going to have a meeting with so-and-so, ask them, what is their role? What is their role? What is their remit? What are they interested in? Because it really wouldn't be great if you're popping off about HLA testing. They're like, that's not what I'm interested in, right? And these are things that you can do a little bit of research on your own, too, but you probably already have these people in your ecosystem talking to people, right? So you'll want to kind of make your own personas about these places. You don't need to hire a, you know, biopharma person to be your BD or anything like that. You can do it yourself. It's just about getting the information and having the conversations. And I really like what you were saying, too. You're a local CRO. Right? You can be just Googling the CROs in your area. Maybe you guys can get together, right? That you've got access to patients. They've got, you know, design testing and quality measures that they can go through, or procurement. You guys can partner together and do some things together. We had some other people that said they engaged.
My name is Seth Mayhew. I have a small lab not too far from Canal, actually, down in San Diego. We do some PBMC isolation cryopreservation. We're qualified with Pfizer and BioNTech. We also do biospecimen. We've been building up a biospecimen repository with the clinical annotation that we get through samples that we receive digitally, through digital requisition forms. So this is a very interesting area for us, and I think the key question is really getting to and getting in front of the right
people. The right person, yeah.
We were looking to utilize the tools and the technology that we have to expand beyond the strictly clinical side and be out from under the thumb of payers.
Yeah.
And we ended up connecting with a local CRO that had need for faster turnaround time for COVID testing. And, you know, Quest was giving them about a week at the time because it was just, you know, everything was massively backlogged. And we were able to do 24-hour turnaround time, and that evolved from there. So for us, we've had some success on the CRO side, but I think it would make more sense potentially to go directly to the sponsors.
Sharing that, because I think it's hopefully valued by everyone in the room. It's finding that one hook, right? It just getting that one hook, and that's where this research ahead of time and getting to the right person really matters. There were.
Yeah. So if you have a health system, speaking on pharma and biotech, they love key opinion leaders, right?
Yeah.
So anyone who is publishing or can be perceived as an expert, right? If a lot of times what I've found, the inquiries go to that physician or that director, and they'll say, I'm too busy, I'm not interested in research, right? And so if I was an operator of a lab or a health system, I would go to those potential people and say, hey, next time you get an inquiry, forward it to me. I'll handle everything, right?
Yeah.
I'll take care of it, and then we can build your research practice around you.
And that's where I'm saying, too, like for the laboratory, don't really, you know, if they're going to pathology, and pathology is ABC Pathology LLC, and they're not giving anything back to the core lab or your lab or anything else, invite them to come to the laboratory and have those conversations and start that dialogue so it doesn't just happen over on the pathology side, right? And that's where you can start having, what are some of the things that you guys are interested in? We have a lot of different programs that we're doing, and you can be thinking through these. Are you interested in patient identification? How about commercialization? Would you be interested? And a lot of people kind of go right to this sponsored testing, which is like, you pay for the test. Don't go there. Just think about like asking them, what are the types of things that you're looking for in here? And they're going to get you to those teams. So remember that every one of the teams has a wallet. Okay. So some people have bigger wallets than other people. And so you want to get to the one with the big wallet that has an easier pathway to give you money. A lot of times that's medical, to be honest. A lot of these quality improvement projects can even happen in medical, or it can be prevalence studies that they're looking for. So you've got to get those right people, because, you know, even though John's a lovely man, he's in there, he has no wallet. He has to bring someone with a wallet to the table. So identify who has money to give you something.
He definitely doesn't.
He's a lovely man, but you know, he's got no money. So that's one of the things, is to really kind of start having conversations. We can give you a little bit of strategy to start with. Mm-hmm. You can go do your own, you know, research a little bit about who's in your area and finding those people, invite them in. And then it doesn't take, you don't have to work with 10 different pharma. You can pick one, and you can just, once you get in, you infiltrate. You can start going to all the different places like you found. You found the one person, you started, you got through procurement. And once you're through procurement, once you're through the quality system, then they just start plucking you again and again and again, because they've got a relationship and all the other stuff is taken care of. We've got a question.
Not a question, but a comment.
Great.
I just would be very cautious about this idea that behind Big Pharma is a big pot of cash, or that there is kind of a lot of money to be spent. I find I'm with Mayo Clinic, and I've worked in legal and business development, and pharma can be quite the penny pincher, and so there can be a mismatch with kind of academic sense of the value of the specimens and the data and what pharma is willing to pay for. So I say that just as a cautionary tale that, you know, you're thinking you're working with somebody that has a lot of money to fund whatever project you're interested in, but I'd be very careful about making sure that, you know, there's some reasonableness to the budget.
That's a great point. Thank you for bringing that up. People do look at pharma as thinking, oh my gosh, it's a pot of gold over there. Remember, those wallets are spread out, right? So you got to be asking people too, do you have a budget for this year? Number one, do you have a budget for anything? What kind of budget expectations are you looking for? Have you done anything in the past that you've budgeted for this? One of the things that can really happen too, instead of thinking we're going to get $1 million from them, right, on this project, think multiple SOWs. Let's start off with this. It's going to be $25,000, something, you know, palatable, right? And then from there, we can build those SOWs once they start to see the value of what you're bringing to them. So you do make a great point about having the right conversations and not thinking this is going to be, you know, save the day. It might be a process, but is a way for you to look at opportunities beyond, again, just that specimen and getting paid for it, right, to do something else.
Well, Emily, thank you for bringing that up too, and just to kind of also connect the dots, right? Julie, you mentioned, hey, don't go right in with these sponsored testing programs and things like that. That's just immediately, and you're highlighting a really important point. And from my perspective, it's very clear. The money is tight. And I think what happens is, as a lab industry, we oftentimes look at pharmaceutical companies and we're like, oh, these are, you know, billion-dollar companies and they have this huge war chest and they're going to support our testing. There really has to be that dialogue, the relationship, and understanding exactly where their pain points are and even where they might not know that there's pain points. So then bringing it back to something you said about data, which was so important about this every day. I'll give an example. Data, right? Hey, Pfizer, you know what? We're having sample problems from one of your largest potential places for patients, either enrollment or access to an approved therapy coming out of, you know, this particular institution. And it's this, you know, we have this data and it's a problem for us in the lab. We're not able to actually run the test or get good results. And that's going to impact your patient identification. That's like a perfect kind of a conversation than to say, let's talk about what we could do to do a little pilot here and see what we can do. And so those are ways to kind of open the door, but you do have to wait. It's like it's almost like being a really smart investor. Not everything is going to be an opportunity. You really need to understand and be able to make that decision.
And we were talking about this earlier. It's like, don't always be selling, right? And we can do this and we can do that and we're the best. And even when I was sitting in on the pharma side and I would talk to payers, the number one thing they would say, I don't want to talk to the labs because all they do is tell me how great they are, how fast they are, how this they are. And I thought, boy, that's terrible that you perceive that. So really kind of think about digging in and finding out, you do have your core capabilities, but finding out the things that they're looking to solve for and what you can actually do for them. And it'll actually trigger you to be more strategic too, thinking about what you're doing. Because you certainly also want to think about, as you're building things on the laboratory down the road, what would you build in if they told you, we're going to budget for 2025. What would you do if you knew there was something, an opportunity to be in that budget, right? So you have to be thinking kind of also down the road. It's not going to happen in 30 days, but these are opportunities to engage at multi-levels. What about anyone else? We got some questions. We got one here, one there. And we've got about, I don't know, what is it, 5 minutes or something?
Good morning. I'm Ken Babineau. I'm president of ACM Global Labs. We are a global central lab for clinical trials.
Great.
And so we deal primarily with CROs, some pharma direct, primarily mid to small biotech. And I think an important piece of the conversation today is knowing what you'd like the outcome to be, knowing who you are as a lab, what your capabilities are, because working in clinical trials, you have to get through the audits, right? You have to get through that quality management system.
Yep.
You have to get through the procurement gauntlet, I will call it. That is a huge tax. Once you get there, a lot of opportunity, but you have to be ready for the RFP mill as well.
Right.
Depending on who your client base is. So if you're just getting into this opportunity set, I think knowing who you are and going the scientific route, making those connections, but trying to maintain who you're presenting, who you are and what your capabilities are is key, because otherwise it will consume your organization just going through the process of being prepared for it.
Theme, which is whether you're working with pharma on the CRO side or on the commercial side, you are business too. So this is one of the things that we've been working to also educate our stakeholders internally. So there's maybe potentially lots of things you can do, but does it fit your business model? Is it really going to be worth it? So I think, you know, making that decision, you have to be able to say, as a business, what are we going to do? What are we not going to do? And you learn that. But don't feel like you can say to a partner that's pharmaceutical or biotech, you know, hey, that's not fitting with our business model. I'd love to help you out there, but it's going to be too much of a lift for us right now. If you say that, right, maybe they want it that much that you can find a middle ground, but maybe not. And that's okay. That's super important. I think because you could completely spend a lot of resources and time and energy on programs that might not bring in as much revenue as you thought. Now, the one last thing I'll say is, do you do other things strategically though too? You know, so as we kind of prepare for the future and Robert's predictions as well, as where we've all seen the industry going, I think also keeping that relationship doesn't always mean you have to do every project with a pharmaceutical company.
And that's a great point. Don't just go start building it all out, because we're going to do all of that with not understanding what the quality systems that are needing, passing those quality reviews. And again, remember, that's more on the research side. Okay, so maybe you dip your toe in on the commercial side, a little bit of data or something while you're thinking and developing those relationships. Or you might even have people within your laboratory that already have some of these other relationships because they're moonlighting or whatever they're doing, right? And then you can bring those together to figure out that strategy. Is this something we want to invest in? We had a question up here.
So that was a great lead-in on talking about what fits the business model. Yeah. I'm a biomedical consultant. I work in the laboratory industry. I work with several different labs that are for-profit, some non-profit, some focusing on specific diseases. What do you think is the greatest unmet need as far as, like, strategy? Is it rare diseases? Is it the top five cancers? Is it somebody's looking for MRD? Is it somebody that just needs this, you know, small focus panel of five targets?
You know what I'm going to say, all of the above.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, if it's all of the above, that's good news. But, all of the above doesn't fit all of my clients.
Correct.
But if it's all of the above, that's fine.
I think one of the things that where I try to go is, again, following the bigger dollars that don't require these kinds of quality things are on the commercial side, okay, and working with the commercial people. And so you can start there, and that could be absolutely rare disease. Is like before, just so it wasn't all that long ago, 10 years ago, pharma would have paid to kill a rare disease drug. Okay? They would have given you money as a research to not develop it. Now all of a sudden they're having a moment. You're seeing like, you know, AZ, NF1 patients or other things like that. They're finding avenues. So it's really started to blossom to do rare disease, which is great for people who are doing that kind of testing where they're going to be able to find, do whole genome or West, you know, and be able to find these patients. Oncology is always, the pipeline is robust, it's huge, it's really going on. But Jen will tell you too, don't ignore the other sides. There's a lot, look at the obesity market right now. Holy cow. You're doing diabetes testing, you're in the game. Every day, if you're seeing GLP, GLP-1, you know, everything, you're in the game if you've got the, you're seeing those patients. Cardiology. A lot of things are happening in cardiology. You see like AZ and Pfizer bought new drugs in those areas and such. So all of those do have a moment. It's about finding where you can engage. That's why you invite them to meet with you. And when you sit down, you're asking what their role is in the organization. How would you do what you're doing and what part of the organization you need to do? Not featuring and benefiting and not saying sponsored testing. I think that would be where you would get kind of having those conversations. Just keep inviting them through. And you can go on all their websites. You can go on LinkedIn if you're getting, I mean, people are using that thing like it's Tinder now. Yeah. And so, you know, those are all means that you could just be doing without, and you don't even have to hire a BD person to do all of this. Just having some conversations. And all of you are probably already, if you're in the lab business right now, whatever way, shape, or form that you are, you're engaging with somebody in pharma. And those would be, that's what I would say. I mean, focusing in on what you're good at. Starting somewhere, putting a strategy together, and then hearing and inviting and having conversations, and then figuring out not just running to where you think they want to go right now. It's going to have to be a plan, a step plan. Yep. We got 5 minutes left. Is there anyone who has something burning they want to ask, they want to disclose?
Anyone else?
No?
Anyone else?
And we only went halfway through the deck because we just didn't want to sit here and be a didactic lecture of.
We did. I'll put in a plug though for the non-oncology. So I spend my time now non-oncology. Rare disease, but also not rare disease.
I'll put you up there.
What's that?
I'll put your study.
Yes. Well, this is actually this is old. So I'll go through this very quickly. I think these slides will become available to everyone. This is actually like my first example of a foray many, many years ago working with pharma. I was working with J&J at the time, the Remicade program, 50% market share for ulcerative colitis and Crohn's. Biologics were coming to market. It just so happened this was one of these things. It's like, we have a problem on the lab side. Let's figure out how we can solve this thing. We decided to license a test from a company called Theradiag. It was a therapeutic drug monitoring assay. At the time, only Prometheus had one. It cost a boatload of money. In Europe, doctors were using drug monitoring, kind of like MRD, right, to make decisions. We knew that this type of testing was important to keep patients from developing immunogenicity to these drugs, and they can remain, right, more effectively on these therapies. Well, guess what? Janssen, J&J, was thinking the same thing too. We decided to license this test and bring it in because it was part of our GI profile, and we also knew what our sweet spot was, 25% GI market share at the time. So actually proactively went to J&J and they said, hey, yeah, we were already thinking about this. We actually put together an RFP at close, but we'll reopen it for you guys because you have 25% market share of the GI and you seem to be a pretty smart lab that can do things for us. And that's what we did. We did develop a program. Out of the park became $4 million program in less than a year. It was only a $200 test. And that was able to actually support that test to offer it outside of the program. Now, as Julie said, don't go right to sponsored testing. We had to find a need. But it was knowing what we were good at, coming to the table to the right company, as we looked at all of the companies that were playing in the space, and creating something that was a partnership. And that was a great, great example. So this is an example, non-oncology ways you can think about it today in non-oncology. A lot going on in renal. There's a lot going on in renal in a place where there was no drugs before. I would encourage you all to go out there and look at those things. Look at things where there weren't any targeted therapies and now there are. And there's maybe nascent testing where maybe you offer that testing and you offer the expertise. The one last thing I'll also say is an easy way to also work with medical and even with precision medicine groups like ours and some of our colleagues here in the room is we do like KOL. So even if you're in your lab, you have a KOL.
Or you are.
Introduce them. Or you are a KOL. Come to us because, you know, we have advisory boards. It's a great way to start to get engaged.
Speaker programs.
We also, I'm always really interested to introduce people from the real world into our, like, R&D teams, and they appreciate that too, because they're bench scientists. They're doing the work in the bench. They're not seeing that. And so bringing together those groups is really important. And it's a great way just to start the dialogue.
Absolutely. I mean, that's one of the things we would have speaker programs, and it could be somebody who was from the laboratory. And it was great to have another perspective because I got tired of seeing the same faces just rotate at the advisory board. It's the same people saying the same thing. Another thing that I wanted to bring up, and we're at the end of our time, is actually we're looking at the regulatory considerations. You're in a great opportunity right now that you're going to be the foremost experts in regulatory for LDT to FDA approval, okay? They're going to have all these pharma people that are going to be learning from consultants about it, but you're the people who are the real deal. Use your expertise and talk to your pharma people that are coming by and saying hi and ask them, would you like to engage or would your regulatory people like to have a conversation and understanding what we're going to do and what this means for us and how we're going to approach this. And that will lead to additional engagements on something that you're already going to be an expert at, and they will want to engage you on something that right now is probably scaring the pants off of you, but maybe you can make lemonade out of lemons with that. Mm-hmm. So these are just some different ways that you can be looking at strategies. Jen and I are around for the rest of the day too. Feel free to come over and tap us or, you know, I want to be able to talk to you a little bit more, and we'll be able to have an additional conversation. We really thank you for your time and thank you for coming in the morning on Wednesday.
Thank you.
This concludes the presentation. Please visit the Executive War College website for details on the 2025 event.